At your camera?
I have my recorder.
Oh, cool.
I wanted to talk to you about, you know, barrels and stuff. Barrels. You know, this is not just any brewery, it's Exhibit A.
How much is it weighing?
It's a beautiful barrel. I didn't realize they were so pretty.
Yeah, they're really nice. The hoops they're nailed in, so even, I mean, but you're going to keep using it for liquid, so they're not going to dry out.
Certainly are.
It's like nerd love and it's fine. You know, it's
he
like,
knows all
you
about it.
Your first barrel, right?
Episode 89. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rio Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC on this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade all around the world. And this week, it's a bit of barrel love, talking about repurposing oak barrels for cider. There'll be more on that in just a moment. Ooh, there is just so much going on in Ciderville. I'm really excited to talk about the barrels. I've just been like rolling around with the barrels, getting up and getting ready for this podcast with you this week. But something else is happening, and it's exclusive for the month of August. So before we get into the barrel piece, I want to like make sure that you know about this offer that is coming from New York State Cider Makers at Eve's Cidery. Next week, we're going to do part one, and then the following week, we're going to do part two with the makers at Eve Cidery. And that is going to be led by Alex Crow, who I've mentioned a number of times on Cider Chat because, one, he's a patron of Cider Chat, so he joined in via the Cider Chat Patreon page, which that kind of always blows me out of the water. We'll talk more about that later. And he's also lent his services of both editing and doing video work. So he's helped me out both on the YouTube channel for Cider Chat, editing the transcript with Charles McGonigal on Making Perry, and now he did a recording while he was at Eve's Cidery, and it rocks. So Alex is just, poof, we are lucky to have people like Alex in Ciderville. And people just like yourself, right? You know, cool folks who help each other out. And because of that chat, when it goes live, you can, right now, if you get in on this, order some of their cider. And the benny is that they are offering free shipping. So just go on site, get some of their cider. I think you have to get like two bottles of cider, and you are good to go. This is a cidery that you want to check out because it's an orchard-based cidery. That means that, you know, they're pressing right there. It's just like the simple ciders from Tasmania that was just on last week's episode number 88. That was Patrick Meir from Simple Ciders. Orchard base. They're pressing the fruit right off the trees, right at the cider house right next door, maybe a couple meters or a couple feet away, right? You can't get much fresher than that. And these folks at Eve Cidery, they are passionate about what they're doing. You could get the link via ciderchat.com, or you could check it out via evescidery.com/ciderchat. So you're hearing it here. I posted it on the Cider Chat Facebook page. You could check it out there. There's a link there, and you don't want to miss it. It's just for the month of August, and why not, you know, grab a glass, sit back and join the chat, listening to them in real time while you're also drinking some of their cider. Isn't that swell? Oh, I just love it. So that's the big news for August right now to kind of put in your forefront of thinking when you're, if you're on your bike or driving or you're somewhere you can't write it down, etch it into your mind right now. Put it into your phone. Do a little calendar check. Order some of that cider to listen to Cider Chat, or, you know, just to bring it to a picnic or enjoy it. You won't regret it. It's going to be it's a good deal, really good deal. Free shipping, holy smokes. And super sweet that they did that for all of us out here in Ciderville. So again, go to the show notes for this episode, number 89. Oh, I have a pile of notes in front of me and a cup full of joy by my side. So it is now time for you, if you haven't yet, to grab a glass and join this chat as we discuss how to reuse oak barrels for cider. Oh, that gets me in the mood for banging on the barrel, which I would lovingly do. Primarily, I've been just hugging my barrel because it kind of has that roundness to it. And it's kind of like one of those pillows that you put into your bed and just snuggle up to when you're all alone. Oh, boy, barrels. I just have the barrel fever right now. And I have to admit, I've had this for a really long time. And I'm going to say it has to do with the wood. There's something about wood that just is just warm and comforting to me, and probably dates back for me to the fact that I was raised more or less like on the water, right on the banks of a river, and my sandbox was a big old wooden boat that was filled with sand, and it was just tons of fun. And then I kind of graduated up to my own wooden boat. You know, they kind of gave me the beater boat when I was a young lass, and that was wood, mahogany top, and I really had to do quite a bit of work on it, and I had a little outboard motor. It was a 25 horsepower. I'd cruise upstream, turn off the motor, and just kick back and float down the river. We'd sing a lot of tunes on that boat, pull out a couple guitars, and oh, it's just a great way to grow up. And the ribs of a wooden boat are much like the ribs of a barrel. So I think that might be my affection to barrels. I'm not sure. Not to mention what they do to a libation like cider or beer, wine, Calvados, Pomu, spirits, whatever. Once you put it in the barrel, it really pulls out the essence. But that time in those wooden boats, I really think was a big part of it. A couple of years back, I finally was able to use some wood that I had taken down some trees on my property and had it milled up, and was going to do a little post and beam outbuilding. That never came about, but eventually I was able to cover my back porch and use these 4x6s and 8x8s. These are pretty large timbers. And had a more or less post and beam cover enclosed deck right behind my home. And when you go out there, I feel like I'm in like the belly of a boat because there's a lot of exposed beams and the way it was all made. It's just really, really, really pretty. So I have a deep affinity with wood, and I would suspect that maybe you do too. It's not unusual. We all kind of gravitate towards something that's really comforting and warm. And when you look at a barrel, there's also that piece of it being round. And round objects like, apples and pears, palms, all have that same kind of essence that just calls out and screams, squeeze me. So we do, right? So that's a little bit of my history with that. And then more recently, well, it's not that recent, but a while back when I was putting my ciders in competition, I was able to borrow a 2-gallon oak barrel from a friend, and he hadn't really used it yet, and of course wanted to get some liquid in, and that, I can't even remember what kind of oak it was. I'm going to say it was American oak. And I put in a sizer that I had, and I talked about sizers on a recent episode with Garth Shandifelt, and he was defining sizer as, or the difference between sizer and mead is that a mead has like 50% or greater honey, and a sizer is much less. And when I call something a sizer, my primary base is cider, and then instead of adding sugar, I'll add honey to that fermentation, right at that primary fermentation. And I've used as much as in like a 5-gallon carboy, 9 pounds of honey, which is really a kick your butt type of cider, or sizer in that case. So I had this nice sizer that I made. It probably wasn't 9 pounds, it was probably a little bit less, more like 6 pounds, which is still, it's going to bring the the alcohol by volume up. Probably that was more like 7%. It's not a sessionable drink by any means. Put it in that little oak barrel. I called it a pig. I don't know why. Maybe that's something I heard from somewhere. Maybe other folks call that a pig too. Kind of looks like a little porky pig. Had it in there at the end where it was conditioning. So I must have left it in there maybe for a month and kept on like tasting it. And I won first prize with that sizer way back. I probably still have the blue ribbon somewhere. I got rid of a lot of my ribbons. I don't know why. I just do. So that was just kind of like the beginning. I always wanted to use a barrel. And since then, I've always really wanted to get back into the barrel aging, mainly because I just think it's cool. Now, I don't know that much about it. I really don't. And you probably have been hearing me talk about this. And thankfully, there's been some lovely folks out there in Ciderville who have been sending me different contacts, and I'm slowly compiling this information. But I thought before I speak to somebody about barrel aging really seriously, I need to kind of feel it. I mean, when you're talking on a podcast with cider makers, if I don't know about cider, it's going to be hard for me to have that chat. And still, I have so much I'm learning in this process. And one of those pieces is having a barrel that I could really experience what it goes through and how the cider develops and some of the difficulty and some of the cool stuff with it. So last week, when I saw my friend who owns a brewery, he posted online that he had some barrels for sale. I asked if he had anything smaller than 55 gallons because I just couldn't handle such a large barrel. Now, the thing about barrels is the smaller you get, the smaller size and barrel it is, the more contact you have on the liquid and the more that the barrel's effect will have on the cider that you have in there. So I knew, you know, it's going to be kind of a little bit of a juggling act. And when he wrote back and said he did have some 25-gallon barrels for sale, I was like, well, sign me up. So I grabbed the last two. I got one, and my friend William Groder, who you've heard on the podcast from time to time, he was with me out in Chicago, good buddy, really passionate cider maker. We both met up at Exhibit A Brewing in Framingham, Massachusetts last week, and we both got one of these barrels. So I'm going to get to that shortly. Before we go full on into barrels, let's look at the history of it and approach it in that avenue and find out, well, when did barrel aging kind of come in, and what were people using to store their libation way back? And when I say way back, I'm saying way, way back before any of us were around. So I'm going to take another sip here, and we'll be back with that in just a moment. I still haven't been able to trace back in time on who exactly started making barrels and where that came out of what culture. We know it happened, and that's all that counts right now. And as folks listen to this, and if you know that, please do send that my way as I'm kind of compiling this. But one thing is for sure, that a person who made barrels was called a cooper. And before coopers came into play, the folks who actually, you know, would steam the wood in pieces and bend it and make it into a barrel, the real key person in a village, or one of the key people, would be a potter, somebody who could throw a clay pot so that it could hold liquid. So if we go back into like Roman times or the Egyptian era, and you think about a tall vessel, rounded at the base, and then it comes up inward towards the neck and then spouts outward again for the mouth, that would be what would be called an amphora. And it was pretty widely used. And sometimes you'd see it with a handle on one side or a double handle. And the handle would start a little bit below the opening, the mouth, and then come down to like the shoulder of the vase. Partly because those handles were good for holding it, because some of these things would be pretty darn tall. They might hold up anywhere to like 10 gallons or 39 liters. I mean, that's heavy. And also for transport, they could wrap a twine around and hold that into place. And looking at shipwrecks, archaeological kind of, I don't know, marine shipwrecks where they go in there, and they would find some of these amphoras still in place. The top, the stopper or the cork on top would have kind of disintegrated, but sometimes they would find different items inside that would really lend a lot of information on the history of that culture at that particular point in time or spot in time. So those were really widely used all over the place. And if you think about the shape of an amphora, that kind of long, rounded shape, kind of like an hourglass on the bottom, then it kind of stems in and then goes out again, and with a double handle. They were also given sometimes as a trophy. There's one that had an inscription that said, "I am one of the prizes of Athens," and that came from like 16th century BC. And I started thinking, you know, wow, well, trophies, If you think about like a classic trophy, that is the actual shape, and I believe it probably came from the amphora. Isn't that cool? So all these things kind of like relate to each other as you go through time. Now, not only did they use these amphoras for probably making wine, because you could certainly make a nice 10-gallon batch of wine in an amphora, but they wanted to make larger quantities. And when you're thinking about temperature and how it relates to conditioning and fermentation, you don't necessarily want to have it in the hot desert sun. So the folks up in Georgia, the western area of Georgia, this is now not in the United States, Georgia, Ciderville, we're talking overseas, they have what is called a kevri. And this is like a giant amphora. And it's a large earthen vessel made out of that classic reddish-brown clay. You know, you had to really find the right kind of clay. And amphoras were, they were using what was called the Nile siltware. And they would make these big vessels and bury them in the ground. And the ground stays a very consistent temperature of like 55 degrees. Even today, they're still using these kevries. And a cool fact, if you don't know, and you're new to Cider Chat and you haven't listened to all the archived episodes, well, you want to go to episode number 11 with Castle Hill Cider in Virginia and hear Jeff Richardson talk about it. I had him on the podcast, and they brought over some kevries, planted them in the soil. I guess you don't really plant them, but placed them in the soil in Virginia, and they are at Castle Hill Cider in Virginia. How cool is that? And you could get some of their cider. So this is a way that folks were doing it before barrels came into play, and they're still being used today. I love that. Just the whole fermentation process. I mean, maybe that would be my next step, is to have a giant clay pot in the ground. That would be pretty cool. Oh, digging that up. Anyways, moving on. So these kevries were happening. We have these nice clay pots, and eventually along came the barrel. Barrels can be made from an assortment of different kinds of trees or wood from that tree. You could find a pine barrel. There are cedar barrels and chestnut barrels. Both the cedar and chestnut are used for fermenting different beverages. And of course, the classic oak barrel. Now, a French oak barrel, a 55-gallon, can go for upwards to $1,000. An American oak barrel will be around $400. You know, there's a lot of pomp and circumstances around barrels, but what it really comes down to is what the cider maker wants. And if you listen to episode 57 and 58 with Eric Bordelais of Normandy, France, you'll hear him discuss briefly and just oh so subtly in that type of Eric Bordelais way on how he selects his oak. And he's very, very specific on what he's choosing. And that is where the quality comes in. So we think of cider making as the apple, the orcharding, and the technique. But if you're going to be working with barrels, well, that is a whole different ballgame. And that is time well spent, because not only do you need to think about what kind of wood am I going to choose? Is it going to be French oak? Is it going to be American oak? What can I afford? But now you also have to take in consideration temperature and humidity. And if you listen to that Eric Bordelais chats and what we were walking into in the castle, he had his barrels on the bottom area, like a dirt and kind of stone floor. And then there was constant like movement of air and temperature control. It was just like the perfect environment. It reminded me of an old home that I lived in and I still longingly think of, because it was a perfect temperature for conditioning any libation I was making. Nowadays, I have a pretty dry cellar, and I think of just kind of carving out a little bit of a hole on the side of the hill and tucking in, I don't know, a big giant culvert, or sometimes a friend told me that you could like use an old septic tank that was never used, of course, and that has a crack in it, and get it for a good deal and kind of pop it onto the side of the hill just for storing libations. Hey, when you're in Ciderville, there's infinite possibilities. The word that they use in France for the cellar room is the chai. And they say it with such feeling. It's like a term of endearment, the chai, as if you want to run in and cuddle each little barrel. And you know what? Watching the makers, they kind of do. And I think you can relate to that too. I do not have a chai, and it might have been a little crazy thinking when I actually got the barrel that I now have sitting down in my basement. But that is kind of like the contagiousness that you feel when you have an option to actually put some cider in a barrel. So I went for it, and today is what I want to really share with you on that story and what I am learning as we go along and roll this barrel. It was only a week ago that I became the proud owner of my first oak barrel. I saw that Matt Steinberg of Exhibit A Brewing Company was selling off barrels, and I asked him if he had anything smaller than 55 gallons. Matt got back to me immediately and said, "I have 2 25-gallon barrels left." I thought about it for a little bit, knowing that, it's not really the size I wanted. I wanted something around the 5-gallon range. It would go up as high as 10. Could I really handle a 25? I probably thought about it for a second and then replied, "Yes, I'll take them." I just said yes to 2 barrels, not 1, but 2. Now you might be thinking, what is she doing? Well, probably like you, there are folks out there in your spot in Ciderville that will say yes to anything when it has to do with cider. Certainly, I have a lot of those buddies around here, and I knew just the guy to call. It was William, who you've heard before on this podcast. Of course, William said yes, and before you know it, we were making plans to meet up at Exhibit A Brewing in Framingham, Massachusetts. I arrived a little bit earlier, and next you're going to hear my chat with Matt Steinberg as we walked up to the barrels and discovered a little bit about their history.
Look at this place. Oh my God. I'm not surprised,
we're just doing it.
It's just happening.
Yours, I think I marked over here.
Great.
Yeah.
So what were these barrels first to begin with here,
So man? They were, and they're stamped, actually.
Nice.
So this will hold. You can hammer it in or leave it there. It was just a sample pour.
What do you mean, a sample pour?
So we could get the beer out when we were aging.
Oh.
But if you hammer it in there, it'll stay. It's stainless steel now. It won't hurt anything.
Is that, how did you get the, you put a little pin in there?
We drill a hole.
Okay,
and then we put,
do that
And then
right.
we use this
All
as
right.
the peg, yeah.
Cool.
It's called the Vinny now, because they... That's because Vinny came up with the idea from Russian River.
No kidding.
This is just our chalk from the work. But
right on.
So Brooklyn Distilling, which I actually have their some of their whiskey here.
Nice.
It's Kelvin Cooperage. What are you doing with these?
I'm going to be using this for cider.
Awesome.
I was wondering how recent. I want to give it a smell.
I'm
kind of curious.
It smells so nice. So they were just kind of emptied not that long ago, a matter of a week,
good.
Couple weeks ago. Or 3 weeks now,
So you want to get them out, get them wet.
Yes.
And but you don't necessarily want to fill them with water, unless you're going to get them in cider right away.
No,
you have a way
I'm not.
To use to get. So it's going to be a while before the cider.
It's going to be, you know, because it's the harvest doesn't happen for a while.
So I would store them. The best thing to do is get it really wet, and then wrap it in some. Plastic wrap. That'll help.
So when you say get it really wet, but not leave water in it.
Just drain the water out.
Water out.
And you're going to do. You can just flip it over and drop this top pour.
Yeah. So I have a couple of questions on it,
though.
Yeah,
let's walk it out.
What about sulfite?
You can fill water using citric acid or sulfites.
Right, or like a sulfur stick or something like that.
So this is the thing about a sulfur stick. There's spirit in this barrel. And it's flammable.
Okay.
So you never want to use a sulfur stick in a spirit barrel. Wine barrel is fine because it's not flammable. Mm-hmm. But I can't guarantee there's no spirit in here.
I put
beer in it and water and like it shouldn't, but I would not. I would highly not recommend that.
Okay, so it's American oak.
It's American oak, yeah.
Sweet, it's really.
And they're solid. They're nice barrels.
So they just used it for the spirits and then you just did
this
one?
They used it once and then I used them once. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
And so why not a second time for you?
They're too small.
Okay.
I have 21 of them. They're not even enough for one length of beer. So we're getting barrels this size in whiskey.
So you have a number of these.
I've sold
25.
All of them.
Oh, good. I'm so glad I
Chris
asked
Courtney's
you if you had a smaller
some.
One.
I don't. I have a smaller one at home. Yeah, it's just like a yard ornament.
Yeah. No, this is super exciting.
And actually, you can go right out that door.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you gotta push it.
A little narrow here. It's a. I guess you can go over stuff. I'm not sure.
It'll probably move.
Here we
go.
No,
it won't.
You'll be able to squeeze through there?
Yeah, it's just my car.
Good.
Matt had the barrel upright and was moving it out to the parking lot to put it into the back of my wagon. You heard me ask him all these questions, trying to figure out how do you manage a barrel that has been used before. Now, this kind of query is something that I think is going to be a growing question for many. Because as we all get into barrel aging, and we don't necessarily want a new barrel, we want to be able to manage it. Yeah. So there's a lot of info out there on the World Wide Web for having a new barrel, and looking at a couple particular factors. Of course, it's wood. And like cider, it's a living being. Wood still has organisms in it, and it's kind of flexing as it's going along. So you want to watch out for that, because wood will kind of both expand and contract, and it will dry out. And if it dries out, well, you're going to have a leaky barrel. And that's a bummer, because you're leaking all that precious liquid out of the barrel, and of course, it's going to make a big mess. So that's not good. And then it could also be the home base for some really yucky bacteria that you don't want in your cider. You know that kind of acetic smell, that vinegary smell? Well, you don't want that, and that could happen. Now, when I was with Matt, I opened up that little bunghole and we were smelling inside. I want to tell you, it smelled great, and it still does. But how do you manage that? And what do you put in your barrel? Do you just put in water? Well, the thing about water, pure water has a pH of 7. And, of course, acid is a big factor in with cider, too. So that will kind of dictate what you put in and how much. But the other thing about water is that, well, it can harbor different little critters in there, too, that can then start creating a foster home for those yucky little bacteria that you don't want in your cider. I mean, some people don't mind that. And that's one way to kind of approach it. But for me, I was trying to keep it as clean as possible and wanting to actually kind of like take some of those flavor profiles that are currently in the barrel and have that work with the cider. I actually really like the smell that's in the barrel now. And I'm thinking, gosh, that would really lend an amazing profile for the cider. The following weekend became consumed by the barrel. I had lots of other things on my plate, but it was barrel, barrel, barrel. My glee and excitement did carry me through the weekend, but I want to say it was a long weekend just for my little 25-gallon barrel. You see, it came with the understanding that, sure, you could ferment your cider upright in the barrel. That means that instead of having the bunghole on the side where I'd have the airlock, they were using a hole that was on the flat part of the barrel, and that's where you would put your airlock. Somehow, I was just scratching my head thinking, I don't want to do that. I want to have the barrel on its side, and as I use the barrel and there's some evaporation, maybe I'll get a little less airspace than if the barrel starts dropping down from the top and creating a very large round space from that flat surface. I hope you get what I'm saying there. I mean, just think about it. If you have a barrel upright, that's a very wide center that you have there with the flat piece. On the side, it's curved. And so as the barrel goes down, there's going to be less air contact. So that was my principal thought of thinking there. And that's what made me then say, crap, now I need a rack to hold the barrel. And as I was moving the barrel around, how do I do that? Well, I had a dolly at home, which I used too. And then next, I took a little bit of ingenuity by looking at the fire pan that I have outside. There's a little metal structure that holds this flat pan that you could kind of move a fire around your yard for an outdoor, you know, outdoor fire. Well, if I flip that upside down, it actually held the barrel perfectly. But I wasn't going to be able to use that because then we wouldn't be able to have any fires for the rest of the summer and into the winter. Now, there will be photos of my experience of managing this little barrel this past weekend. So do look for that on this here episode number 89. And I'll be posting a video melding all the different photos together and some video clip I did too while I was working with the barrel. That will be on the Cider Chat YouTube channel. So I do recommend subscribing to that as it goes along because we'll be getting stuff up there slowly but surely. So the next thing I was going to do was, well, I can't use the fire pan. I'm just going to make a stinking rack out of wood. I have lots of wood kicking around. And if you haven't guessed by now, I'm pretty handy, meaning that I've built more than one thing in my life. And I have a little skill saw and all the little accoutrements that go with it. I just took a little look on the World Wide Web of what folks had for a rack. And before you know it, I grabbed a couple 30-inch 2x4s and slapped a rack together. It wasn't all that hard. It's just time. Everything takes time. And no different than making that rack. But do take a look at that online. And, you know, if you want to make your own rack and you're trying to figure it out, just pop me an email, ria@acidochat.com. Maybe at some point I'll put up the dimensions there. But for the most part, I'm hoping by just looking at it, it will work for you. So I finally built the rack. I got my barrel on top of it. It's now sideways, and I made the rack so that the wood was just touching the rings. I'm thinking I should have the wood on the rings versus on the wood so that it doesn't kind of pull out from one wood piece to the other and start transferring liquid out. I don't know why. That just makes sense to me. So that's how I set it up. And now I was going to have to make a new hole on the side where I'd be putting the airlock because I remember I had closed up the two side pieces. Now you think this is all kind of straightforward, but you kind of scratch your head. What size bunghole should you have on the side? Well, it wasn't really too difficult to kind of figure out once I found a good rubber stopper that I had in my basket of goodies for cider making. And I came up with a little rubber stopper that has two holes in it, one that I'll put the airlock, the other hole that I will keep plugged, or I could always transfer a little tube in there and pump CO2 into the cider, maybe to pump it out as needed. And of course, it's all about having the tool in the right spot. Before you know it, I was hunting up high and low looking for the perfect little drill bit. That was on Saturday, and I had to let the project go until Sunday. When I got up the next morning, and while I was on the hunt for the perfect drill bit, I decided again to figure out what am I going to put into this barrel? So I made a little bit of a phone call out to a friend.
Supply.
Hi, Mark. It's Rhea.
Hi, Rhea.
Hi. I left you a message, and I thought you probably haven't listened to them yet. I just wanted to make sure I didn't have to run down there before you closed today. I have an oak barrel that I just acquired from Exhibit A Brewing, and I'm going to put cider in it. And it had like imperial stout in it, and it was charred. I actually just rinsed it out. It was really dry. No beer came out at all. And I'm just wondering, how is it best to, like, store it between now and, like, a month or so while I get the juice?
I would say the best thing to do would be to put some metabisulfite and water in it and fill it.
How about citric acid?
Well, I don't think that would be an antibacterial type of thing, but it would probably be better than nothing.
Okay, I have both. I do have the metabisulfite, but and then just rinse the hell out of it before I put the cider in it.
Right.
Okay.
But, yeah, usually people just store them with metabisulfite and until you're ready to use it, basically.
Okay. Well, I hear you have people coming into the store, so I'm going to let you go. I want you to know that I just recorded this, and you're going to probably be on the podcast about oak barrels.
Okie doke.
I'll keep you posted.
All righty.
Okay, thanks, buddy. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
That was Mark Laro of Beer and Winemaking Supplies, Inc. in Northampton, Massachusetts. And Mark has a store that's been around for 40 years. I mean, that is long in homebrew shop time. It's pretty incredible. And though he didn't open up this store, he's owned it for, I think, like 30 years now. So it's really something what he's been doing there. And there's actually two shops in Northampton. There's Beerology, and I had Mike Schilling of Beerology talking about wild ciders and yeast. That was episode 54. So I feel pretty happy that I have such an abundance of and wealth of knowledge in my area. Now, let's get back to what we're talking about. See, this is what I'm saying. There's a lot of different approaches on how to hold a barrel while you're waiting for the cider so that it doesn't foster any kind of like bacteria and, you know, mold or anything like that. Now, we're hearing from Matt, don't use the sulfur stick. That makes sense. He mentioned citric acid and sulfite. William sent me an email and he pasted it from somewhere. It says, use barrel maintenance, and they are recommending to make a holding solution that will promote sanitation and keep the barrel swelled and smelling sweet. It's not recommended for new barrels, barrels less than 1 year old, or barrels previously holding spirits, such as bourbon. And this one says to use 1 teaspoon of citric acid and 1.5 teaspoons of potassium metabisulfite, basically your Camden tablet. And I'd have to measure that all out. And you dissolve that, and then you pour it into the barrel after you've poured hot water into the barrel. You know, you want to kind of mix it all up first. Well, the thing about citric acid is it's going to pull out any of the spirits that have been in there. Now, that might be good if you want to kind of clean out the barrel, but I don't really want that. I'm kind of looking for some of those profiles. Again, I'm just feeling the energy of the barrel is the way I look at it. And what Mark said was, you know, use the sulfite, but why use the citric acid? You know, use that better than nothing. But he wasn't too hot on it. So I was scratching my head that day. But first I had to drill the bunghole while I was still figuring out what am I going to put in there. Again, it was still empty and I had rinsed it out with water earlier. I had gotten some of the char out. But let me just stay on the bunghole just so you could know what I did there. I finally found my inch and a half size drill bit. And I did take a video of me drilling into the side of the barrel. And what I found is about the thickness is about almost an inch thick. The actual center of the barrel, the wood thickness. It's pretty darn thick, so you got to be prepared for that. And it does make sense that it's thick because there could be a lot of pressure in there. And that went pretty darn smooth. So I started drilling with the bunghole upright and made the hole just about halfway through. And then I turned the barrel on its rack sideways. I vacuumed up. I cleaned up as much wood pieces as I could and then finished the rest of the drilling. So all that loose wood wouldn't go into the barrel. Now, it probably wouldn't really hurt the barrel, really, because it's the same oak. But I just thought, just to kind of keep it clean and sanitized, because the drill bit could have a little bit of schmutz on it too. That might then be a little bit of a medium to create some kind of bacteria that I don't really want in there. So I did the drill bit. I had my little rubber stopper ready to go, and now I finally had to make my decision. And what I have decided to do was I just filled it with water. I did everything that everybody was saying don't do. Don't just fill it with water. So right now my barrel is filled with water. I've been doing this research for this podcast and I'm thinking, what next? Well, I am going to add sulfite, and I've been doing a lot of different measurements with the sulfite to try to figure out. I'm not going to add the citric acid. I just feel like it's going to be cleaning so much out. I don't really see the purpose of it. I'll be curious to find out what William actually does. And, of course, the final factor will be how do our different ciders taste. So I'm going to make a solution of sulfite. I will be draining the barrel again and then filling it up and adding some sulfite. And then I'll have to monitor it between now and the point when I actually get some cider in there. Whew, that was a lot of work. A lot of work figuring it out, but I have learned so much about barrel aging, or what I should actually not barrel aging it, just barrel preparation. The barrel aging is going to come on the flip side of that. That's all to say, Ciderville, that when you want to do this, it takes time and it's a commitment. Had I looked at it, you know, kind of going backwards, you know, I might not do it. But two things kind of happened to me before I actually got this barrel. One was, if you recall, I got my new cider press. And that was just a couple episodes ago when I was talking about cider press history. With that big old cider press, if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't have bought this barrel, because to fill that barrel up and buy juice, it would cost me a pretty penny. But now that I have this cider press, I'm figuring I'm going to be able to get my own apples. And I only know that because this is a very good year. So all those factors coming together made me decide to go forward with the barrel. If it had been any other year, I wouldn't be doing it. If I didn't have a press, there's just no way I would have gotten the barrel. But the press is what kind of pushed me along. And I want to tell you a little bit about the cost of this, but let me step backwards. When I was at the auction for the cider press, there were a couple barrels there for sale, and I had to leave, but I had told my buddy who was there, you know, I'll go as high as $35. There was it looked like a 5-gallon barrel, and the other one was probably like a 15-gallon barrel. The 5-gallon was definitely a vinegar barrel already. There was, if you wanted to use it for anything, it was only going to be vinegar. The other barrel had promise, but I didn't really know how long it was there, and I was smelling a little acetic acid in there. Again, that's kind of like the beginning of vinegar, so it was going to be kind of chancing. It wasn't totally as bad as the 5-gallon barrel, but it was, you know, getting there. And so I said, well, what the heck, I'll get it and maybe I'll work with it somehow. Well, don't you know, those two barrels went for $250. Wow. This barrel that I just purchased, I paid $75 for. And I guess Matt originally got the barrels for like $140. So I felt, well, you know, I got a pretty good deal there. But it'll only be a good deal if I make a product that actually is going to taste good enough. I don't want just good enough, I think, actually, too. I want it to be darn good. That is the price of cider. This all takes time. And so I'm hoping that if you are a cider maker, you could relate to this. And if you aren't a cider maker and you just enjoy cider, you have an understanding of the steps that it takes to get cider done. It is a lot. Now, there's just a couple more little tidbits I'd like to share with you about barrels. This is a charred barrel, and that means that they actually char the inside of the barrel. And part of the reason that they do that is that a charred barrel works really well with whiskey. And the actual inside looks black. So there's like little flakes that come out, and it kind of like activates almost like a carbon filter where it could even like remove some sulfur and some of the compounds from the whiskey. And it also lends like a darker color, some smoky notes. You might get some caramel and honey, some kind of like spicy kind of accents in it. And I think that's pretty cool. There's different levels of charring. This particular oak barrel that I have, and again, it's American oak, said number 3 on it. And at that time, I didn't really know what that meant. But there's different levels of charring. And a number 1, if you get a number 1 charred barrel, that means that it was charred for 15 seconds. Number 2 means it was charred for 30 seconds. Number 3, like mine, was 35 seconds. Number 4 is 55 seconds. And they kind of call that an alligator char because it actually looks like the skin of an alligator inside. I think that's pretty good stuff to know as you're going out and hunting for your barrels and to figure it all out. So there's so much more. This is just a precursor to many more episodes on barrels and getting an understanding of what they're all about. One other little tidbit is when you're filling a barrel, you always have to remember that there's going to be what is called the angel's share. And that's like the little bit of evaporation that goes out. I just love these terminologies. And these are things that if you are working in the industry that you want to be able to make sure you know and have your salespeople know and folks who are tending the bar know too. This is all part of increasing our cider knowledge. And even if you aren't in the industry and you're going out and about, it gives you an understanding and appreciation for the product that you are being served. There is just so much there, isn't there? It's just all for the love of the barrel and that barrel aged cider, because when it is done well, it is exquisite. So I will be keeping you posted, and there's a lot more to explore on the topic of barrel aging. I didn't even talk about a brand new barrel. That's a whole other beast, and the wood and all that. So there's a lot, and that's the excitement of Ciderville. We're just on a journey together, trying to figure it all out and making good choices as we go along, because time is precious, and so are all those amazing apples and pears out there. So stay tuned to this channel. I'd like to give a shout out to Current Cider down in Pennsylvania and wish them the best of luck for getting their tasting room open in the Fishtown area of Philadelphia. They are going to be at Pour the Core. That'll be coming up in October, so that's a good place to kind of meet them. That's going to be a big event in Philadelphia. And good folks, because right from the start, they have been helping support this podcast, being part of the Cider Going Up campaign. And I know that ain't easy for a new cidery, but yet they do it. So thanks to the folks at Current Cider and to the other folks who are not necessarily commercial cider makers who are also helping this podcast pay some of the bills. Please consider becoming a patron today or donating to Cider Chat. You can find the links at ciderchat.com or Google Cider Chat at Patreon, and you can check out that little site there. It's helping content creators like myself help, in this case, keep this chat thriving. Thank you so much to the patrons. Big tip of the glass. Next week, we will be in New York State at Eve's Cidery. Alex Crow is going to be the reporter bringing us that walk in the orchard. So do subscribe to Cider Chat today and make sure to share that there is a podcast all about cider out there in the world, because folks got to know it. In the meanwhile, it's August, and I'm ready to head out and get the sulfites in that barrel. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.